Okay, we are going to start the English medium discussion, weekly discussion on Tuesday. Today is 14th March 2023. So we have appointed Sutta, Tuataka Sutta. But before going to that formal discussion, if we have any other interview reports or any suggestions or comments, welcome. Otherwise, we are going to go to our routine appointed discussion. Distractions are getting away.
So we have received one report and one question. With your permission, I would like to present.
Yeah, now we can hear. You can proceed, please.
Yes, Swaminathan, first the question. Most respected Bhante, please, can you explain Asanni Samadhi, and it is the same as what you call experiencing a black hole in meditation? Thank you, Therwan Saranai.
No, end of the question. There is nothing called Asanya Samadhi. That is a kind of a wrong usage. So you have to define it, or otherwise Niranja has to read it properly. Otherwise, I can't understand the question.
Swamin Mahansa, it says Asanni Samadhi.
No, there is no such in Tripitaka. So I can't comment unless otherwise get the connection. Therefore, I am asking the redefinition of the question itself.
Swaminathan, I will write to the same email and let...
No. He or she must be listening. He or she must be listening. Why should we take worries? They must come and they must give
a...
Yes.
Yes, we will invite if they, she or he in the participants, they can raise hand.
Yeah.
And until then, Swaminathan, I will go to the other report.
Yeah.
Swaminathan, it's an audio report sent by 11 years old Dinuka Dikets. I will play the audio, Swaminathan, now.
Today I did walking meditation for 1 hour. When I started my meditation, I wanted to do something else instead of doing my meditation. But I decided to do my meditation because it would make my amma happy. So, as I started my meditation, I noticed that my feet were very cold today. And I think this was because I'd been walking on the hot floor, because the floor was hot, and that's why it made my feet feel cold. I also noticed that the end of the mat was quite frayed, so that when I reach the end, sometimes my foot would catch a little bit of the mat, and I would sometimes even trip. I also noticed that as I got further into my meditation, less and less thoughts of like distractions occurred, and I felt much calmer further towards the end, which is something that I do not normally experience during my meditation. I also noticed that the sound of the birds outside like I also notice the sounds of the birds outside, and when I heard this, it distracted me a little bit from my primary object, my feet. But the sounds of the birds made me quite happy. Another thing I noticed was that I would bring my left foot. When I lifted up my left foot, as opposed to my right foot, I would lift the left foot a little bit higher. And I think this is because my left foot is a bit stronger than my right foot. I'm not sure. Thank you for listening, Bante.
Parawan Saranai. Honest report, good account, counting, and you practice at least to satisfy your mother. Good. But anyway, you had the peace of mind. That's a kind of a gift. And while walking, still you know birds are singing without an audience. You are the only single audience. And still, you can see you are lifting the right leg higher than the left leg. That means bird sound is there. The birds are happy, your mind. Otherwise, a distraction. And still, you can see the movements of the left leg is lower, right leg is higher. That means your mind is very working in a matrix, not a linear. Not distracted by a sound. Sound is in the background and it's optional, whether it's happy or not. And you are very detailed in observing the right leg and left leg. The most admirable thing is you are 11 years old. 11 means two lines. Both of them are same. Then we call 11. And still you observe left leg is you are lifting higher. And right leg is higher and left leg is lower. These are the fine detail which is called sap of the Dhamma, the juice of the Dhamma. Though elderly people just ignore them. They wanted to have vipassana jnana, they wanted to have abhijna, they wanted to have dhyana. They are just abstract. They are very pragmatic. So therefore, I wish if you can write weekly reports, and let us start the discussion with that kind of a very pragmatic, very fresh, open statement. We are disqualified to say good or bad. We are just sharing, admiring how much you have the expressibility, how much you can articulate, how much you can verbalize what you wish. And therefore, thank you and wish you all the best to maintain your trend as well as this reporting capacity, this thesis writing kind of good expression. Thank you very much, Buddha. Anyone who wish to comment on this before going to the sutta?
Thank you, Swaminansa. Thank you for the report. And I was just really happy to hear how honest you were and how interested. You sounded very interested in investigating these different things and looking for the reasons why did the left leg lift higher than the right or and you had a wide range of things that you noticed. You were hearing bird sounds, and you noticed that made you happy. That's, being in touch with your feelings and also objective things like your foot raising higher than the other and the mat being frayed at the end, and that sometimes that tripped you. You noticed the temperatures of the floor and your foot and the difference between those. And so just a wide range of different things you were aware of. So I really appreciated hearing all of your report. I hope you report again and send your recording in, because it's good to hear your voice.
Awesome, Swaminanda. Dinuka's report is sort of amazing, and the most important thing is that even Dinuka's report is nice and it's happy, we wouldn't be able to comprehend it, but Mahathero explained the importance of it, the sap of it, hence we felt the importance of it and the freedom and the liberation of expression, and also it is more than reading 1,000 books. It's a one genuine experience. As Mahathero said, I also very humbly and eagerly invite Dinuka and all the youngsters, like there was a little girl, I can remember her name. She has written a beautiful letter week before. Likewise, if you could send, we could really learn from your reports, and I humbly appreciate the beautiful report again. Thank you very much, and wishing you all the very best.
Thank you very much for the comments and encouragement for the younger generation. So I would like to invite Venerable Buddharakkita to start with the sutta from the point where we stopped last time.
Okay, so the next verse is, he should not overindulge in sleep. He should be devoted to wakefulness, ardent. He should abandon indolence, hypocrisy, laughing and playfulness, sexual intercourse, and personal ornamentation. So this is a kind of a synopsis of the training of somebody who is more than just amateur, kind of a serious practitioner. This is where somebody is like on a retreat, or they have ordained. So in this case, he should not overindulge in sleep. So this means that he has a regular sleep. He has an adequate amount of sleep, but he is not overindulging in it, meaning spending too much time asleep. I remember in Burma, Syada Upandita told us about one person who came on retreat, and this person had the ability to sleep for every sitting session. So he would sit down, he would sleep, then he would get up, stand around for a while, and then sit down and sleep for the next sitting session. And this went on for a couple of days, and he would report every day. Quite honestly, he would report what had happened, that he had slept. And then the Syado asked him to leave and go home again, because he said he was like an idle worker. He had this expression, idle worker. He wasn't performing his duty. He wasn't performing his task. That he was just sleeping when he was supposed to be working. And like this person could do this 16 hours a day. You know, we had long formal practice times from 3 in the morning until about 10 o'clock at night. And so every hour, you know, every second hour, we had sitting, walking. And so this person could sleep all day and then somehow sleep at night as well. So it was really kind of an achievement that you could sleep so much. But yes, as we practice, we can actually have a requirement for less moderate amount of sleep. Again, I don't recommend undersleeping. foolish. In the long run, you need to have a healthy amount of sleep, but it's this overindulgence in sleep, as the Buddha says here, that is the problem. He should be devoted to wakefulness, ardent. So wakefulness here is another word for mindfulness. And wakefulness means attentive, that you're alert, that you're present, that you show up in your own life. And ardent here is ardent in the practice again. So what is the purpose of your wakefulness is to be an ardent, an effortfulness, a certain amount of ardor, energy in the practice, that you're diligent in the practice, that you're about the business. You're not messing around. You're not distracting, you know, putting your efforts into fruitless activities, that you have a purposefulness to your practice, and you diligently corral your efforts. You diligently you have a discipline about where you expend your efforts. You have a purpose, a goal, a meaning to your practice. He should abandon indolence, hypocrisy, laughing, and playfulness. So indolence is a form of laziness, and hypocrisy here is saying one thing and doing another thing. So this could be where he's a boasting or a braggart about what he is doing or achieving, or it's a hypocrite, a person who, like I said, says one thing and does another thing. Laughing here is just kind of like people can be like making out like they're having a good time, or that they're just constantly seeking to be entertained. That kind of frivolousness of where we're having a laugh and let's have a laugh, and they put a lot of effort into, you know, fooling around and just filling their time with a constant effort to entertain themselves and entertain and distract others. And playfulness, yeah, again, you know, you're sort of like the class clown. You're trying to always be, like, this isn't playfulness in a healthy sense of the word. This is like a person who's quite needy and they want attention, and so they sort of trivialize everything. So they're kind of people like where they they're like, oh, you're so serious, you know, let's have some fun, and they trivialize things. Whereas, like, I think in meditation, actually, a real playfulness is required, where you play with the object, or like Dhanuka this morning, you play with your steps, you play with your meditation, meaning you have this kind of delightful interest rather than being rigid or stiff. But this is just what my mum used to call caffling or fooling or messing, or just a kind of a play that isn't like, I think play is very healthy, you know. Like, I watch the monkeys playing, you can see where they learn skills. You watch children playing, it's a very critical form of their development. But this is a playfulness where it isn't really playfulness, it's just wasting time. It's being distractive, being a nuisance, being attention-seeking. Then he should abandon sexual intercourse and personal ornamentation. So again, here the sexual intercourse is referring again to the precepts. So, like, again, if people are on retreat, they will take sort of vows to intensify that they avoid sexual intercourse. And obviously, as monks and nuns, we would avoid sexual intercourse. So here, it's not just simply avoiding it. It's a mastery where one isn't as such indulging in sexual intercourse, or entertaining it, or thinking about it, or, you know, you have a self-mastery over yourself where you're about the business of meditation or your object of meditation or about the Dhamma, and other things are inferior. So things like sex, drugs, and rock and roll are inferior forms of pleasure. And somebody who is diligent and serious about their practice is not going to trivialize and waste their time on things that are inferior forms of pleasure. So they have a self, they're self-possessed, they're self-mastery. They're not somebody who is, again, needing that kind of low form of fulfillment or trivial form of fulfillment or neediness, that they need to be sort of boosted up in some ways that sexual intercourse might give them. And this personal ornamentation is again referring to fashion, to clothing, to their stuff. That the word that's actually used is wider in terms of ornamentation. It's all of their stuff, that they have the right stuff, that they look cool or something like that. So again, we have to, we wear what we need. It's enough to protect us from the cold or the weather or the insects or the wind or the rain. But that's about all that we use. So again, it's shallow people. They put so much effort into stuff so that they can boost themselves up. So these are all different. The Buddha is guiding us away, and it comes off in a negative way, a negative sense. Oh, don't do all of these things. Don't do all of these things. But it has to be viewed in a positive light, that you're freeing yourself from a lot of traps. So you're freeing yourself from the trap of indolence and sleep and, being a hypocrite and just laughing and fooling around and constantly trivializing everything and constantly being shallow and seeking sexual intercourse as a pleasure. You're trying to gratify yourself. You're a slave to instant gratification and empty things that will ultimately not be satisfying. But it comes off as very negative. On the other hand, it's very liberating. He's like saying, do you know that there are that this is a great purpose in life and that you don't need to sleep your way through life? Do you know that to be wakeful and heedful and ardent in your practice is a wonderful thing? Do you know that indolence and hypocrisy, laughing and playfulness are just trivializing and wasting your time? Do you know that sexual intercourse is not the highest pleasure, and personal ornamentation, having the coolest stuff, is not totally cool? You know that there are other things that are more meaningful and important in life. So if you have that kind of superior view or approach, or you take that higher road in life, you travel that road that is less traveled, you can find that it is deeply beautiful and a real value. You know, and you bring your life in line with your goals. If your goals have anything to do with the Dhamma, then all of these shackles start to fall away, these trivial things. And it's very liberating to be free from those things. Anyway, maybe Mahatera has something else to say.
You know, which is, if you are an advanced yogi, when the sloth and torpor or boredom or monotony sets in, specifically when you are reaching slowly to the middle path, you feel like that you are losing the ground, you are losing the touch, you are losing the connection, because you are well connected when you are in the sexual indulgence or in sleepiness. Their ego is very prominent. So therefore, when you are traveling in the middle, if you are sitting on the pivot of the seesaw, you don't feel the wave. Under such circumstances, mind indulge again, going back to the gross areas, just to verify, am I living? Am I wakeful? Am I mindful? So therefore, occasionally, you have to go back and see, back and forth and see, even though the primary object is flat, even though my primary object is boring or in the middle, so keeping the maintenance of that is very difficult. Yoga yogi or a bhikkhu or a meditator is for the first time observing it. But the main thing is to maintain it. So to maintain it, you either go to the sleepy side or to the overindulgent side. So the Buddha says, don't go to the extremes. You can go to a certain amount of the sleepiness because the chakkumasa yathahando sotava badhiro yatha atta atto samuppanne sayeta mata sahita. You behave like a blind. You behave, even though you are a eyed person, you behave like a dead, dumb. And even you have ears. If you have the smell, taste and kind of thing, you behave like an idiot. And someone is really, really asking, prompting you to go there, then sleep. Just say, just like a corpse. Because people are giving so much of invitation under such circumstances, the sickness is good. Sleeping is good. It's a remedy. But it's very rare. So that is how when we are living specifically in a society and the meditation is increasing towards the vipassana, often mind is going to the middle. So only way out is go to the extremes or go to the self-indulgence or self-mortification. Don't go to the extremes. You have to make use of them to thrive. And again, you have to come back to the middle. Again, go to a certain extent sleepiness or to a certain extent to the sex, on the sexual indulgence, but the sensual indulgence, and come back. So when playing only, even an advanced yogi can make use their verifiability or verification with the mindfulness is intact. Of course, it appears like this is instruction for the beginner. When some person comes to the retreat, he says, you have to walk, you have to work this much of hours, no sleepiness. And don't do playful things. Don't talk. And that is the basics. But when you come to the very advanced levels, that is to say, when you are associating the middle path, so these are the things to verify, am I the same person? Have I lost them permanently? Or occasionally you can go there. That is that playfulness is not the playfulness. That is verified. I am living, I am not sleeping, I am not unmindful. So that part is very person-specific, meditation progress-specific, so very difficult for you to give a common instructions. Otherwise, they appear like a sila sikha. But I am trying to explain, is this a panya sikha also? Sila sikha, panya sikha appear like contradictory. In panya sikha, you indulge certain amount of activities and certain amount of lethargy, and then see how much the middle path, without going to the extremes, you can do it. So that is called Arya Paryasana. It's a noble quest. So therefore, when you go to Vipassana, when you go to higher level of meditation, your early habits or your early way outs are at the periphery. You may be using them in order to test, not to indulge sexual or sensual or sleepiness. So that is why Niddhangna Bahuli Kareya Jagariyang Bhajaya Atapi Nanding Mayang Bhasang Kiddang Metunang Vipajahe Sabibhusang. Person who is meditating or mendicants, don't do overindulging of sleepiness. Instead, have wakefulness, don't be lethargic, and don't be perverted, or he used the term hypocrisy, and cracking jokes, and games, or any sports. And vibhusana sahita meundam, metunang vipajahiye savibhusan. And you indulge sexual intercourse in a playful way, in a show-off way. That knows aphrodisiac. And make it this thing, and don't do it. You do it, the meundam, the highest one is the one ceremonial way. You do it, and it is for the rich people. Or even the poor people can do it. This is just for the sake of show in the films, in the blue films and all the kind of things. Don't go up to that point. But lower level of sensuality, you have to indulge. Otherwise, you can't keep it up because mind is very in the middle part. So when that happens, those who are very serious about ethics, those who are very serious about monastic code and sila, they are utterly numbed. They are utterly, anesthetized. They can't proceed. But they are self-critical. Am I transgressing? Am I thread passing? Oh, am I? It is happening in the mental level. The mental level is not a kilesa. It's happening not expressed by verbal or physical. But you can understand earlier it was very transgressional, it's tread passing. But you can see the shadows. Don't go to extremes. So shadows as well as no feeling or no labeling or no indulgence with the middle path, you are playing in the narrow margin without going to the extremes. So that part in our interpretation, in our commentary is lost. Commentaries are talking about the younger generation or the beginners with the sila, overemphasized. And when you go to the higher grade, solitude practice of vipassana, the sila is not relevant because you are alone. Sila relevant whenever you have a second person. Whenever you are in ethics. Ethics means at least two people. But when you are living in alone, or means of verbal and physical things are controlled and say calm and quiet, but the mind play within a cage-like. So no chance to go out. The Buddha says don't go out. And he mentioned what are the things can occur. Sleepiness can happen and wakefulness can happen. And don't entertain lethargic or negligence, and don't be hypocritic, but don't think it is you are doing something and thinking something. No, you are not doing and you are not talking. You can see the mind, how perturbed against the middle part. And that is also maya, basang. You are trying to feel like talking with someone or teaching someone. Don't do it. Kiddang, that means some sports. But the mind is sporty. But you are not doing it physically, not doing it verbally. And metunam vipajahi. Metunam means two by two. Metunam means a male-female. That is a special term. But you are alone here. But you can do it, indulgence, the past and the future. So don't do it. But you can see mind is playing within a range. These are the points you have to understand when the mind becomes disciplined. These things are still, you have rudiments, you have sediments. And they can come and do. They are also in a dissolving way. You are adopting into the middle path. So therefore these things, the specks, and tiny shadows can happen. Don't self-critical about them. They are good signs because they are not thread passing, they are not transgressing, and that part very difficult to teach in sila. Sila give a black and white difference. You must do that, you must don't do this, don't and do's. becoming silabbata paramasa. Practicing person has to understand how much I have discipline, still the mind shadows or the rudiments and the sediments are there. Don't indulge them, but see them. With respect to them, you have the middle path. So that is how you have to discipline. That discipline is, I don't call them as sila sikha, I call them as panya sikha, or vipassana way. Even in the Mahasi system, I never see that kind of a dangerous kind of interpretation. They are utterly adhering to the Visuddhi Marga. That means the beginner's instruction. But the advanced people, they have liberation. In the Tamil Tiger organization, no one can smoke. No one can drink alcohol. They have to grow plants. They are very industrious. But the Prabhakaran and SK and the other people, they are drinking. They are wearing different clothes and smoking. So other people can't understand he as a LTT member. But he's the highest ranker. They are not abiding by. They are doing it in order to camouflage. They are in principle, they are against drinking. They are against smoking. They are against the different safari suits. But when they are doing operations, they do it. Even their members can't understand. They are super people. So likewise, the poets have poetic license. They are not abiding by the grammar. If it is so, you can't compile a song. And in the army, commander is not disciplined. He has the authority to command everyone. No one can question him. So likewise, the Buddha himself banned all the superhuman super magics. Then other people start telling, now no one can do it, we can say they can't do it. Then the Buddha says, no, tell them, I am doing. How come Bante, you banned him, now you are going to do it yourself. Then the Buddha says, you know, when King Bimbisara's mango grow, there's a super hybrid mangoes. No one can pluck. But the King Bimbisara can pluck. That's why he called the royal mango grove. So likewise, ask them to come to that place. I will do it. So this performance is not breaking rules. This is a pragmatic thing. So likewise, you must understand when the mind becomes lethargic, when the mind becomes more and more to the middle path, there are ways and means mind find little refuge with the sleepiness and overactivity. So don't let them happen overindulgence, but you have to understand it is not moving far away like a pendulum. It's just moving at the middle path. So these are the things can happen when mind becomes such a discipline and such a wise. These things can happen. They are usually come with the Orambhagya Sanyojana, the higher grade of five shackles. Uddambhagi. Orambhagi means Kamachanda, Vyapada, Tinamidda. No. Sakkayajitti, Vichikicca, Silabhata, Paramasa, Kamaraga, Patiga. They are cut off at the Anagami level. But for the Arahant, Ruparaga, Aruparaga, Mana, Uddacca, Avijja. The shadows of them, still they are. But if he is perplexed in mind, he will say, even though I am Anagami, I have these kind of things. But they are shadows. They are not real, living. But they are precipitations. They are sediments. So you have to keep on, let them happen and dissolve them. Again, let them happen, dissolve, but they are not transgressing. They are not thread passing. So that you can share with others, but you have to decide your past history. And then understand, even they are happening in a disciplined way, or in a benumbed way, or in a disabled way. You see, you give an injection of half-killed germs so that you get the antibodies, vaccines. You give a germ. So likewise, now we have to give a germ and see how the mind, with respect to the middle path, how the reaction. Earlier you were reacting with respect to the extremes, but the Buddha says, don't go to the extreme, but from the middle path, still the mind is reacting. So you can see, even you are an arahant, till you pass away, so Mahaparinibbana, your six senses, using these kind of little movements, not they are not idle, they are not in the middle path. These things are there in order to run the machine. Otherwise, it's idling and corrupting and rusting can happen. So, the other people can say, even the arahants are committing this and that. But only Buddha knows. He's not doing that. It's a maintenance course. It's while it's happening, once in a way, you have to have a run. Otherwise, if you keep the vehicle in the garage for longer time, not good. Once in a way, it will start. And then run it so that the battery will get recharged. Otherwise, it will get corrupted. So therefore, even if you are arahant, you are not idling till you have the great passing away. These activities, the other people can't measure. But the great arahant, they have told, they have expressed. And sometimes cases happen. And then the Buddha says, no, my son has no that potentiality. This is doing... just like a rehearsal, just like a PT practice. It is not to kill, it is not kind of thing, not transgressing. But the people, those who are putujjana, they don't understand the level of transgression and within non-transgressional thing. That is all called putujjana. They don't know the boundary. They don't know the Arya Vohara. They don't know the how the Aryans are working. They are expressing and they are mentally, they don't know. They measure by from their point of view. Then the Buddha comes and says, no, my son is already gone. These performances are not, it is not judgmental. No, you must not judge. Then you are in common, you are in trouble. Listen to me. So this is the way this happens. So present day in meditation, some, even the young children, they have gone that kind of, but the parents can't control them. But they are talking about the, with respect to the middle part. Parents are talking with respect to the extremes. So these young children, you have to tell. Don't listen to mother and father. I am directly telling. You listen when you are at home. When you are in Satipasala, mother and father also child. You are also child. You do anything. And tell me. Express me. Express. And then I am sharing with others. So that is a kind of psychological, living the boundaries. Because that the ethics, the sila is an utter shackle. It is valid as far as you are in society. You bloody fool, go to the society. But you learn in the society, go to your place and be with yourself. The regulation, sila, morality. Morality comes only when two people happen. That's called Maituna. Maituna means Mituna Lagna. We have the 12 constellation. Maituna is male and female together. And Maituna Dhamma means copulation. But to have the copulation, to have a touch, there should have two surfaces. But if you have one surface, the Zen Buddhism asks, what is the clap of the one hand? What is the sound of a one hand clap? No sound. They should have kind of thing. But even then, mind is living. So it is having some shadows. It is having some old games. That is to keep it some kind of a warmth. Because your central nervous system is working. And other organs is not much in work. Peripheral. Central nervous system is working. So to keep that minimum amount of food must be burnt. It is minimum, and the blood circulation come down, nervous system come down, centralize. Still, there is a action, there is a momentum, and he only can see it is going on. Ultimately, he can't keep the track. Drop. So leaving the track, and coming back on the track is not under your control. That Venerable Dhammadina, Sister Dhammadina told, going to the Nirodha Samapatti, you can't aim. It will go. Coming out of the Nirodha Samapatti, you can't determine. it happens. Because at that level, your judgmental power and good and bad, black and white, everything disappeared. So in the Udanapali, so much of the stanzas are there, Anuntulan, Subha, Subhang, they are never arising, never evolve, never die. There's a kind of energy. That energy also you can say as a wakefulness or sleepiness, that you put the label, that energy don't carry any label. That can't, you can't hook any label. So this is the part beyond language. And now, I don't know what is the proximate cause. Now people are talking more than earlier. Well, than my younger age, people are talking these things. And the best is Sutta Nipata. The best source. But we can't explain this only through the sila restraint or moral restraint. It is childish in this year. But you have to understand, same thing happened in an evolved manner from the middle path, middle way based. This is extreme base. So you can have the interpretation accordingly. That is what I thought of sharing with.
Sadhu, 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 Bhante, Mahatero, and thank you, Bhante, for your giving attention to the details of how you explained Bhante, hypocrisy and laughing and playfulness and all these things, how we tend to avoid our make fun, make play when we should be, when we can actually come to practice and, you know, rather like you had said it, Panditarama Mahatero, there was, you know, commenting on the person being idle, an idle worker, and Mahatero, especially Sadhu, for making this so human. You know, it seems that we can latch on to, we can become attached to observing sila and making things too much based on rules, being attached to the rules and sila, and like we read this verse and it's, you know, it sounds very kind of strict and saying don't overindulge in sleep, should be devoted to wakefulness, ardent, should abandon indolence, hypocrisy, laughing, playfulness, sexual intercourse, personal ornamentation. And but I, from what I can understand, Mahatero saying, you know, that as we become more directly into our practice, where we're feeling, we're feeling our mindfulness is getting better, we still have these, or even at the Arahant level, there is this arising of this residue of old playfulness, maybe, and or even maybe, you know, feelings of sexual, you know, or thoughts of sexuality or things, even Arahant may have the residue of these things arising, but it's not a transgression, it's not a problem, it's just natural. And so I just very grateful for Mahatero for bringing this into a really human way of seeing our practice without, you know, without being confused by, you know, such things as, you know, these sila practices or, you know, these particular pointing out overindulgence in sleep, you know, sometimes, and I think Bhante as well are saying that, you know, you need enough sleep, but to be overindulging is is can be avoiding like problems that you may have yourself. And Bhante was saying about playfulness being something that is that people are sort of, it's like they're avoiding something, or they're, you know, it's always looking for playfulness, always being very playful and like the class clown. And also, you know, they're on the other extreme, there are people that are too serious and too attached to the sila and very, very, you know, like hard line and serious about sila. And at the same time, that could also be something about that person's personality, that they are becoming attached to the rules. And at the same time, that can too be a way of missing the point and being too strict, too serious and too stiff, or, you know, not spontaneous, not having the spontaneity of humanness when we become too playful or too serious. So I just appreciate Mahatero's way of saying, you know, to me it expresses, you know, that we're human and that this practice happens without our attachment to how we think things should be, or, you know, our particular attachments that we bring into practice. Before we even, you know, become know of practice, we have these sorts of tendencies or characteristics of our human nature that are actually hindrances to, you know, to waking up. And so when we start to realize kind of a middle way, like Mahatera is saying, is it's this middle way, it's not to the extremes. So we can start to realize this middle way when we let go of those extremes. Thank you, Swaminansa. Thank you.
Hosrai Swaminansa. Thank you, Mahasangha, for all your comments so far. First of all, I wanted to say that, sila is very important for the practice because it builds restraint and it helps with your mindfulness, to build your mindfulness. And it also, helps you to be restrained. So sila is very important for the practice. You know, vinaya is very important for the practice of monks and nuns, you know. But I think as I have heard being pointed out in this discussion, it's not to be a source of grasping. So sila is definitely important for the practice. It's definitely important for restraint, and it's definitely important for helping to build mindfulness. And so in the case of monks and nuns, we have, you know, vinaya. Monastics, we have vinaya. But sila is not supposed to be a source of grasping. So once, you know, if somebody turns sila into a source of grasping, if they cling to sila, it becomes like this view that they have, they're clinging to. And so they can get into debates. They can, you know, have arguments with other people. They can bicker with other people over, you know, sila. Oh, you know, your sila is not as good as mine, or, you know, your monastery doesn't follow as good sila as my monastery, or where I'm staying at, this and that. And, you know, that's not the point of sila. The point of sila is to build restraint and to help build mindfulness. So, it's not, you know, it's supposed to make you more pure. It's supposed to help you become more pure. And it's supposed to help you become gentler, wiser, more kind, you know. And so if you're debating and arguing with people over sila, you know, that's not very gentle or polite or kind, you know. If you're going around and, you know, trying to force your views down other people's throats, that's not really polite or nice or friendly. So that's you know, clearly not the point of sila. You know, it's to make you more pure and more kind and more wise and more virtuous. And so that's what I wanted to say about sila, is that, you know, it's very important for the practice, and for restraint and mindfulness, but you know, helping to build restraint and mindfulness, but it's not supposed to become a source of grasping. Same thing with right view, you know, right view, you know, you see in the simile of the snake or the water snake, in the simile of the raft, you know, mm-hmm. you know, are you using the Dhamma to cross over, you know, the flood? I don't know if those are the exact words the Buddha used, but you know, when talking about these similes, but are you using, the point is, are you using the Dhamma to, you know, become liberated from suffering, or are you using it just to, you know, fight other people, essentially? You know, are you turning it into a weapon, which it's not meant to be? It's not meant to become a weapon. You're supposed to use it to liberate yourself from suffering. You're not supposed to use it to, you know, get into these battles with other people. It's not supposed to be a weapon. So the same thing with sila. It's not supposed to be a weapon. It's just supposed to help you in your practice. So it is important, but it's not, it should not become a source of grasping. And then also, you know, there in this verse that was read today from this sutta, there was, you know, talk about, it was talking about, you know, abandoning or abstaining from sexual intercourse. And, you know, I can speak from experience. You know, when I was a lay person, I had several romantic relationships, and, you know, there's, when you get into a romantic relationship with somebody, there can be that, there is, that attachment, you know, that gets built up between the two people. I saw that when I was, you know, a lay person and having these romantic relationships, you know, I was even in a relationship before I became a monk. I broke it off to be a monk, but, you know, there's this, there was this attachment, you know, with these relationships. You know, it's one of the wonderful things about celibacy is that, it helps you to cut off that attachment, you know, to other people, to other beings, you know? And so, you're no longer seeking to gratify yourself. If you're maintaining celibacy, you know, it helps you to cut off that attachment to other beings. So you're no longer seeking to gratify yourself sensually with other beings. And so, you know, as a result, you know, you can become a lot more, you can become a lot less selfish. When there's not that attachment there, you know, you can have more loving relationships with even members of the opposite gender, you know, just beings in general. You can have much more loving relationships where it's start to have metta, where you can start to have karuna for other beings, and not, you know, be seeking to gratify yourself sensually. You can start to have this universal, this unconditional love for all beings in the world. And so that's what celibacy helps us to do as practitioners. You know, when we're maintaining celibacy, you know, that's what it's helping us to do, is to develop this universal love, this kind of unconditional love for all beings, where we can, be there to help other beings, not harm them in any way, shape, or form, you know. And it's a wonderful thing, you know, to be able to do that. That's the beauty of celibacy, you know. So those are my comments. Thank you.
So it is almost time up. So I would invite you to read Mahasi Sayadaw's first chapter in Vipassana Treatise, and it is, I translated it into Sinhala. I went through the Burmese, and Bhikkhu Bodhi sent me the English translation done by Kulamin and others. And first chapter is about the Sila Visuddhi, complete area where this Venerable mentioned that how the Arahant had the suspicious kind of behavior, how the Buddha explained himself, and other thing happened where the Buddha passed the judgment from the middle path, not from the extremes. All the things are there. So ultimately, conclusion is, monks are very disadvantageous in meditation because they have so much of rules. Lay people can do it because only 5 precepts, 8 precepts. I witness partly because I practice as a, even without precepts. And it was very easy because we have not proclaimed, we have not claimed that I am so and so. And last sentence he says, even then, don't underestimate sila. If you go to hell, 99% people in the people or beings in the hell is without sila. Have sila, it's a beginner's mind. And after a while, you have to think, it's a grasping. Sila bhata paramasa. So it's a very good treatise. The Sila Visuddhi, I think that will give the kind of how a wise person, how the point of view of the middle path, how you can look at the people, or those who have broken Sila, those who are Arahant, appear to be breaking Sila, but the Buddha gave a very nice interpretation. Mahasi Sayadaw collected all in the Tipitaka and present. Very nice one. So we are going for Pindapada. Thank you very much for the participation.